Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review, it's the beginning of bus tour campaign season in Wisconsin. Both presidential campaigns are flooding the state with surrogates. We have their message to voters. Plus, state election officials spar over how voters can return absentee ballots in November. And new figures show crime rates are down in Wisconsin. Why the issue continues to be a key talking point on the campaign trail. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for September 27th.
Hi, I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We're going to start with, now that we are less than six weeks out from the presidential election, now that the candidates, of course, are still coming, more visits next week, it's also a flood of surrogates for both campaigns have been hitting Wisconsin pretty hard this week. If you just take a look at your screen, these are some of just the high-profile visits that we saw. On Monday, we began with the Trump campaign launching a three-day bus tour, which ended in Waukesha with a town hall, and that was headlined by Vivek Ramaswamy, and several others were on this bus tour as well. Meanwhile, just yesterday, we had Tim Walz's wife, Gwen. She hit up two of the Wow counties, Ozaukee and Waukesha County, with a visit in Grafton and Waukesha. And then later tonight, AOC will be headlining an event in Madison at the Orpheum Theater. So this is pretty typical to see this many people coming when the candidates themselves are not on the grounds. But when it came to messaging this week, we heard from Ramaswamy specifically in Waukesha talk about election integrity. We know that's a key thing with conservatives and Republican voters this election season. Meanwhile, Walz, when she was in the Wow County, she highlighted how this is going to be a tight race and that every single vote is going to count. Specifically, it's this whole part of strategy by Democrats trying to pick up votes in areas that typically, traditionally, elect Republicans. So let's first hear from both of them on their messages this week to voters.
The default principle should be single-day voting on election day as a national holiday with paper ballots and government-issued ID. And I think that will actually bring us together as a country. I favor making election day a national holiday. I think that's actually going to be good for the civic spirit of the country. So the goal is not to be an absolutist about it. The goal is to set a North Star as a baseline principle from which you use accommodations, which is a familiar approach we've used in the law in the past.
You are tireless volunteers who are going to keep Wisconsin blue. You are going to get this to be blue. And Kamala and Tim, we know this. They're the underdogs in this race. But I know that we can win. And I know why we can win. Because we have you.
We can expect a lot more attention here in Wisconsin is the bottom line of why we wanted to mention this.
Oh, okay. It's the puzzle again, right? So it's not about necessarily winning for Kamala Harris, winning Waukesha County, but it's the margin. Ron Johnson got 62% of the vote in Waukesha County and won by 1 point in 2022. Donald Trump was below 60% Waukesha County in 2020. Didn't win. It's that margin. If you are Harris and you can get to, you know, just enough, it makes a big difference. If you are Trump and you are going to Prairie du Chien like you are tomorrow, you're trying to gin up turnout in there. You're also using messaging, right, because of happened a Venezuelan immigrant who was arrested there for assault and other charges. You're trying to get a message, but also the puzzle. It's all just trying to get people going on. By the way, I'm used to seeing this, but like usually late October.
Right.
Late September is kind of unusual to have this many people parade through the state. It's interesting, too, because the more you look at like the maps of the nation and what's going on, Trump's best path is right now is Georgia, North Carolina, and Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania is the linchpin for everything for both sides. Harris has got to win Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania. Arizona's still a possibility. Nevada's still a possibility for her. North Carolina looks okay in some regards. But for her, those three got to win. Trump, if you can take Pennsylvania from her, it's over. Same time, if she takes North Carolina from him, that's a big problem. So we are important for both sides, although for Harris, it's kind of like a must win. For Trump, he wins Pennsylvania, it's not that big a deal, but he's still focused here too.
Yeah, what I thought it was interesting too, because I was at the Grafton and Waukesha visit with Gwen Walls, that she wasn't just here for the top of the ticket. She also was joined in Grafton by Jody Habesh-Sinkin. Mm-hmm. She is the Democrat running for the 8th Senate District, and she'll be going up against Senator Dewey Strobel, a Republican. That district has changed under the new maps. And even before the new legislative maps were enacted, Habesh-Sinkin lost by fewer than 1,300 votes in a special election to Senator Dan Knodel. So it's trending more blue. And this is really, talking to Democrats on the ground there, believe this is their best shot in many years. And this also just goes to show kind of the suburban women vote has been really changing in those WOW counties, and also Ozaukee specifically, that has trended, trickled more blue, and somewhat almost purple after being so reliably red for so long.
And what's Trump's message been lately about women? I'll be your protector. Mm-hmm. You don't have to worry about things if I'm elected. You'll be so safe and secure. You don't even worry about abortion. Now, I don't get the impression from the polls that I've seen that women will be stop worrying about abortion anytime soon, with Donald Trump especially, but he seems sensitive to the idea that he is struggling with female voters and has to do something about it.
It's kind of, the storyline is Trump has a problem with women, meanwhile Harris has a problem with white males, yeah. And that's going to be their battle until the very end here to try and gin up those voters to pick them. All right, let's move on to other election news this week, which is related to complaints that were before the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Now, like most election commissions meeting, the commissioners kind of nitpicked at one another and got a little heated at times over how absentee ballots can be returned to clerks for the November election. So this debate stems around two complaints that allege clerks in Brookfield and Greenfield that they allege that they broke the law by cutting off the drop-off times for absentee ballots before polls close, and that they did not allow voters to return ballots at their own polling place. And this stems also from the August primary. So when this debate came up, Bob Spendell made claims of like, well, if we don't change the laws, this is going to lead to more ballot harvesting. And this is the longstanding debate of who can return your absentee ballot to the clerk's office. But also there are voters who take their ballot to their polling location on election day. Let's just hear from all sides on this issue and how the debate got a little bit heated.
I'm sort of floored that coincidentally in a political year where there's a tax on absentee voting, suddenly we're changing our minds on the rules. We made those instructions mandatory, and it tells every absentee voter in this state that they can take their absentee ballot to the poll site.
This is not only orientated towards disabled people. This is saying anybody can drop off their ballot. It's also saying anybody can bring anybody else's ballot in to drop off too. If that isn't called ballot harvesting, I don't know what's called ballot harvesting.
I'm sorry for getting flustered, but this is a misrepresentation of the case law that's out there, as well as how the commission has interpreted and messaged it. This decision has nothing to do with ballot harvesting. The case law is there. The case law says that the voter must return their ballot. And the only instance that's been interpreted otherwise by a court was the U.S. District Court's decision in Cary that said a disabled voter is entitled to assistance.
So there wasn't any resolution, which just now goes to show, in a sense, it could be the Wild Wild West on Election Day, and what clerks decide that if they want to cut off the time at, you know, we're not going to accept your ballot at 7 p.m. at night, when actually, by law, they're supposed to stay open until 8 p.m.
So here's the weedy stuff about this. And I try not to get too much in the weeds sometimes, but that's when you have to. So your deadline for absentee ballots is 8 p.m. on Election Day. That's going to have to be in. Now, you have to be in time to get it to the polls by 8 p.m. If you drop off your clerk's office at 7:59 p.m., how is it to your polling site by 8 p.m. or to Central Count by 8 p.m.? That's very difficult, right? So there's a little rub there. Two. When you vote absentee, you have an envelope that you sign as a declaration that says, I cannot or will not be at the polls on Election Day. So if you're signing that declaration, how do you drop off your ballot at the polling site on Election Day? Again, these are weedy things, mm-hmm. but the guidance has been clear for years. Drop off your absentee ballot on the polling site on Election Day. Without this reprimand being approved by the commission, it does leave the door open to, okay, clerks saying, well, if they're not going to reprimand those guys, then I can kind of do what I want to do. Now, the question is, how many people might be disenfranchised or impacted by this? Again, we're not voting by, as much by absentee as we were before. And how many people actually turn their ballot on Election Day, right, the polling mm-hmm. site? Usually, you do that if you're afraid of the mail. Mail's not as fast as it used to be. So if I've got my absentee ballot on my desk on Monday and I've turned it in, I might want to figure out something Monday or Tuesday morning. That's the question. How many of those people are going to be left on Tuesday and get their ballot back last minute, and are they impacted by local clerks' decisions?
Right. So those are a lot of questions this week. But also, there was a lot of talking about absentee ballots. There was an error in Madison that is receiving somewhat a national attention after a Republican congressman tweeted about the entire issue. So here's the backstory. More than 2,000 voters in Madison were sent duplicate absentee ballots this week. But election officials said that none had been returned and that all affected voters were contacted to destroy the incorrect ballot. Now, Clerk Mary Beth Whistlebell attributed it to human error and said she did not contact law enforcement because she believes there was no criminal conduct there. First, let's just hear from her on what actually happened and how this all came about, and then we'll kind of get into how this has essentially spewed a lot of misinformation about absentee ballots throughout the entire week. Let's take a listen from Mary Beth.
On Monday, we started hearing from voters calling saying, I got two ballots in the mail, and what happened was one of the files of absentee voter names and addresses, we accidentally ran it through twice, and so we sent them two mailings. The barcode on the envelope is identical. We've told them, destroy one of the ballots, return one. If somebody were to return two ballots, we can only check one into the poll book, and the other one would have to be rejected because you can only get one voter slip number on the poll book. If somebody returns two marked ballots in the same envelope, both of those ballots get rejected. That's just a rule that the state has.
So she basically said someone in their computer system duplicated it. It was a mistake. Everyone's been contacted. However, this left open the door for a lot of questions from Republicans, specifically Congressman Tom Tiffany. He tweeted on Twitter, or X, excuse me, that, you know, this is illegal. People should further investigate this. What it come down to is that originally Mary Beth, the clerk in Madison, said that there is a barcode on ballots themselves where we can track that if you try to turn in two, it's not going to count, that they have safeguards in place. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, that barcode is on the absentee ballot envelope. So, okay, really not really kind of changing tune. Madison corrected their statement. Then Tiffany called for a further investigation. However, what Tiffany claimed is that I don't see any barcodes on these ballots. There's something suspicious going on. Meanwhile, my colleague of mine at CBS 58 asked Tiffany, don't you know that there are no barcodes on ballots? And Tiffany said yes. So in a sense, he's admitting that he kind of was, you know, fanning the flames a little bit. And we are a state, like many others, where election officials are under heightened scrutiny with how our elections are run. So this just once again goes to show that clerks are scrambling to try and fact check individuals and that, hey, there's nothing suspicious going on. Yet when you change your statements and things like that, it's just not a good look to skeptics out there.
Like if Trump wins Wisconsin by 50,000 votes November 5th, we will hear nothing about Madison from November 6th on. But before we do that, let's talk about the safeguards. So, no, they're not barcodes on the ballots, but the envelope there is. So let's say you got two ballots, Emily. You send one back in the envelope with the barcode. You can't mail the second one back in a plain old envelope. They won't take it. Let's say you want to go to the polling site and try and cast that extra ballot. They have books that say you've already cast a ballot. You can't be here to cast one. Let's say you don't turn in your first ballot and you take the second one to the polling site and say, okay, I'm going to sneak in my pants. I'm going to vote in the polls. I'm going to feed two through. One, they're going to catch you.
Mm-hmm.
Two, if there is when they do the polling sites, if they have more ballots than people checked in, they do what's going on here. And there is a process to try and rectify the situation. So there is not going to be an extra 2,000 ballots in Wisconsin, barring some crazy scenario that I've never heard of before. That all said, this all feeds into the kind of argument, line, whatever you want to use, that Trump's been raising about there's going to be fraud. They're going to try and steal this election like they quote-unquote did last time, which didn't happen, but still, that's his argument. So with these 2,000 ballots, again, if it's a 50-50 seat race on election day, you will see Republicans go to the courts and list this plus X, Y, and Z as a reason why there was quote-unquote fraud or whatever, make the argument. If it's a comfortable Trump win in Wisconsin, it's not going to be a big deal. but it's not a great look. Like, we have more than 800 clerks in Wisconsin who basically run elections. Their own unique elections in some ways. There are humans involved. They make mistakes. That's the way it is. Mm-hmm. Whenever you make a mistake, it fans these flames of what's going on and why is this happening and, oh, here we go again. That's why it's a bad look. And in Wisconsin, again, we're not going to be perfect, but the more closer to perfect we can be, the less oxygen we give to these theories about what's going on with our elections.
And that's why so quickly things like Congressman Tiffany's tweet can just blow up into national headlines. Also making national news this week is the city of Wausau. Why? Because their mayor on Sunday decided upon himself to remove the absentee ballot box outside City Hall by putting on a hard hat, as you can see there, and a dolly because he was concerned that it wasn't bolted to the ground. So Wausau Mayor Doug Dinney is now facing backlash after he physically moved the ballot drop box. And now the Marathon County District Attorney said she has launched an investigation into the matter. Now, Dinney did run on his opposition to absentee ballot drop boxes. But this also raises a lot of legal questions, whether a mayor has the authority or anyone at this point to keys to City Hall that they can remove a physical, piece of property with the city. He also talked to some Wausau TV stations saying that why he decided to do this is that since it wasn't bolted to the ground, that it essentially someone else could have just tossed it into the lake.
So important note, it was not open yet, without being used. The city clerk says she was planning to basically get it bolted down and secured before it's officially opened. Also too, the clerk is now using a different slot at City Hall to accept absentee ballots, so there's a mechanism there to return them. But this is, again, goes back to that entire thing where there is all this smoke around Wisconsin elections. And, oh, by the way, we have a couple of municipalities in northern Wisconsin, I believe, sued by the U.S. Department of Justice because they did not have handicap-accessible voting machines during the August primary. They went to hand-count things. Like, it's just there is the potential for this election not be over on November 6th, the day after when we should be done counting, but to stretch on for weeks and possibly months. And so I've seen comments from Trump campaign officials saying the election is not over November 5th. It goes until January, which is when they count the votes in the Electoral College. Now, we all went through what we went through in 2020. Nobody wants to see a repeat of that, but it underscores that there could be legal fights about what's going on here and other places that last for weeks and months that could drag this thing out yet again. And when that happens, it undercuts confidence in how we do things in Wisconsin.
Right, and people deciding to move drop boxes or just prohibit them altogether has been a growing trend, specifically in southeast Wisconsin, is something that I've been tracking. As you can see on your next slide, each week, every day, almost it seems like more municipalities are deciding to opt out of ballot drop boxes, which is their choice. Mm-hmm. I mean, the state Supreme Court, after they reinstated drop boxes, after overturning a previous court order, it gives clerks the power to use these or not for voters. So many more municipalities are added to the list. Some, I will say, like Brookfield, New Berlin, others in the Milwaukee area that have opted to lock up their drop boxes, they are going to extend their in-person absentee voting hours. That means more weekend hours. So if you just want to vote absentee or I'm not going to be around on election day, you can still do that in person. So that's how they're trying to counter this argument, because voting right activists, again, this week, they've been holding a series of press conferences strongly encouraging this community to reverse course. I don't think many of them are, but this again goes on to the argument where we see Republicans, national and state ones, saying, hey, please vote ahead of Election Day. We want you. We don't want to be down tens of thousands of absentee ballots because more Democrats tend to vote absentee on Election Day. Meanwhile, their options are going to be limited in these conservative-leaning communities that have decided to not use them.
We talked about the surrogate visits, Vivek Ramaswamy, during Stop and Waukesha, was asked by the crowd, what about election integrity? He said, look, if you elect Republicans to full control of the Congress, White House, we're going to change all these laws. We're going to have, like, single-day voting, blah, 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 but vote early. It's just that contradiction mm-hmm. of messages that I'm not sure that Republicans are going to embrace early vote. And again, we're not voting absolutely the way we used to. It's not like 2020. I've seen, like, some national people look at the number of requests for absentee ballots in 2020 and try and draw a conclusion what's happening. Such a different election than it was 4 years ago. But again, the drop boxes are an option. They're not going to be a make or break for either candidate, I don't think, in this election, barring it being down to a few hundred votes, probably. So
right.
We'll see.
We will see. All right. And just looking looking a little bit back and ahead about the candidates themselves being here in Wisconsin. It was last week that Vice President Kamala Harris, before we taped, of course, held a big rally in Madison on Friday, which marked her first visit to the deep blue college town here since moving to the top of the ticket. Meanwhile, you mentioned this earlier in the show, JR, former President Donald Trump will be holding a rally in Prairie du Chien to highlight immigration policies after local police recently arrested a member that they say was from the Venezuelan gang, and he was charged for assaulting a woman and her daughter. So there's kind of a purposeful reason why Trump is going to this area, and the event itself has been scaled back. There are reports from CBS News National that he wasn't able to secure enough Secret Service agents for the event, so instead of outside, it's now going to be scaled down indoors. Meanwhile, looking ahead to next week, many of my sources have told me Trump is going to be coming to the Dane County area on Tuesday, and of course, that is right before for the vice presidential debate on Tuesday as well.
Yeah, more parade, more people, more coming. Harris, 10,000 plus people.
Yeah.
On a Friday night, Madison. You know, there's definitely some excitement here that's going on, and we're in the thick of the storm.
All right, let's move on to briefly we'll just talk about the state superintendent Jill Underley delivering her address about education and the state of education here in Wisconsin. During her address, she urged lawmakers to release funding for the state's new literacy law. And Underley also knocked the GOP-controlled legislature for failing to release $50 million set aside for new reading initiatives and noted that the Joint Finance Committee, which is the budget committee, was not able to do that quite yet.
Yeah, the thing with DPI that I've kind of following is budget requests were due from agencies a week and a half ago. DPI did not turn in its full request. They did not include funding for K-12 education, so we're going to do that later on. The state has a deadline of November 20th for the Evers administration to release a summary of the budget requests from agencies, as well as a look ahead about how much they expect the state to take in for tax revenue but through mid-2027. That number from Jill is going to be interesting to see how much they think they need or want to fund education. It was $2.5 billion for an increase 2 years ago. She's talked about being in line with that or more. It's going to be a big chunk of change. It'll be a big fight in the legislature next year.
All right, let's get to stock picks this week. And rising is Byron Conway.
So it is unusual to see a judicial appointment, federal one, confirmed so closely to an election of a presidential year. I mean, usually they kind of grind to a halt, especially when you look at like the timeline with Conway. So remember, this seat's been open for a while. Judge Griesbach up in Green Bay announced he wanted to take senior status December 31st of 2019. Well, 2020, COVID kind of put off a bunch of stuff. 2021, Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson are U.S. Senators, start the Federal Nominating Commission. They produce four candidates. The White House picks William Pocan, brother of Mark Pocan, the congressman. He is nominated, but then Ron Johnson puts a kibosh on that, says he's heard complaints that William Pocan's from Milwaukee, not Green Bay, for a seat in Green Bay, and he thought he had given some low bail in some cases before him. So that one goes away. I started again. It was a last summer, June of 23, that the nominating commission gave two names to Johnson and Baldwin, who then sent those to the White House. The White House waited until July of this year to nominate Conway. It's like, what are you waiting for? Especially because for Democrats, filling judicial vacancies has been a huge priority. And so you nominate somebody in July, the election's in November, lots of times things kind of grind to a halt for a good reason, because they're going, hey, we're going to get a Republican president maybe, mm-hmm. for Republican senators. We don't want this to go through. Lo and behold, Conway cruises through. I think the vote was like 57 to 38. Ron Johnson supported it. Now, the key may have been that Johnson turns blue slip. It's tradition in the Senate where if you have a nomination like this for a district court, you get basically veto power over that appointment. If you don't want it, you don't return your blue slip, it puts a kibosh on that nomination. Johnson returned the blue slip, spoke highly of Conway, that gave the green light based Republicans on the Judiciary Committee to get behind it. He sails through. Interesting to know, too, that he's got a history of giving to people like Democrats. So I was like, okay, well, maybe that's kind of interesting. No hitch. Just kind of a surprise. I mean, good for him. It's just kind of a surprise. And maybe it's just that it's a district-level seat, so there wasn't like any real, I don't know, urge to shoot it down. Appellate ones, the big ones, appeals right. court, Supreme Court. And then two, Johnson nixed one. Maybe it wasn't an appetite to go after a second person and just get this thing filled.
But you're right. It was surprising because mm-hmm. this has been a very long, dragged-out process for quite some time. All right, let's get to Mix this week and Jim Rafter.
So looking at ad buys in the five Senate races that have been kind of watch so far in the state Senate, Democrats dropped byes in two of them. It tells you that they are so confident about the 18th, which is an open seat along Lake Winnebago from Oshkosh to Appleton, and the 32nd Western Wisconsin, where Brad Path is, they're like, they're in the bag essentially. And asking Republicans, I didn't get much blowback that no, those are competitive seats. It's narrowed the field in the Senate down to three seats. One is the 8th in suburban Milwaukee, where Dewey Strobel is being challenged by Jody Habersynikin. One's the 14th north of Madison, where Joan Baldwin's being challenged by Sarah Kayeski. And one's up in the 30th, the Green Bay area, where it's an open seat, where Rafter's running against Jamie Wall, a businessman who ran for Congress about a dozen years ago. Looking at those three seats and the ad buys and the resources, Rafter's number three in the pecking order for Republicans. Mm-hmm. That is fairly clear. Now, Jody has $3.1 million in TV reservations through between Labor Day and Election Day. That was a competitive congressional campaign a few cycles ago. Now it's a state Senate buy. Over here in the 14th with Kayeski and Baldwin, it's fairly even. Up in Green Bay, Rafter's got a huge disparity. Jamie Wall's got $2.5 million reserved on TV. Again, insane number. And Rafter just isn't like on the same parity with him. There's probably a reason why Republicans aren't investing in him. One, Rafter raised a whole lot of money. Last campaign finance report. We'll get new ones on Monday to see like if he's improved, but he's not doing great financially. Wall is doing well financially, and that's just a slight bluish shade of purple up there in that district. Two, when you are a caucus, your priorities are the incumbents. You have two incumbents in Baldwin and Dewey. That's where the money is going to go. And looking at those races a little more closely, Joan is number one for resources. There's parity in spending there. More groups are helping her. Part of it is, even though it's a worse seat kind of on the numbers for Republicans than Dewey's is, but Joan is like this kind of, she's like a nice person. Her first TV ad has her baking her great-grandma's banana bread.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up.
So, you know, she strikes that nice person. Her family name's well-known. The district changed a lot from what it was before, but Republicans feel like she's in maybe their best bet to hold on to that seat. Strobel, like Ball, they get hammered on abortion right now on TV. His district's like a 51% GOP seat, real purpley, but he's way more conservative than it is. It's a suburban seat, trending away from Republicans mm-hmm. because of Trump and everything else. So does Dewey have what it takes to hold on? Oh, by the way, we're not seeing lots of help for Dewey just yet from outside groups, a little bit, but not a ton. So is it because Dewey has been a firebrand in the Senate legislature that groups who normally give money to help Republicans aren't excited about helping him? He held up, for example, a big utility bill or helped hold up a utility bill this year. So where's the help coming for Dewey? Or they want Dewey to spend his own money. He's fairly well off. But for him to spend it, it's really a fascinating to watch that dynamic. But those are, if I had to pick, those are my two seats that are really, truly toss-ups right now in the Senate. Rafter, Wall, leans Wall's way right now. Then the final factor is top the ticket. If Trump wins by a point or two in Wisconsin, it helps Dewey and Joan quite a bit, maybe even Jim. If Harris wins by a point or two, it makes Joan's life that much more difficult and makes flipping Dewey's seat that much easier. And the key for Democrats is they can't flip control of the Senate this session. There are these five seats. Take those two off. They're going to pick up one Republican seat. They got to win two more to have a shot to flip the Senate in 2026.
All right, let's get to falling this week. And new statistics, crime is down.
Yes, crime is down according to reports to the FBI from local agencies. Now, this has been a point of contention since the debate. Former President Trump said those are all off. It's all way up. He cites a survey of people 12 and older asked, have you experienced crime and everything else? Okay, his other argument is, well, agencies don't report these FBI numbers. I looked at the Wisconsin numbers, okay? In Wisconsin, crime is down from 23 to 22. Of the agencies, all of them in Wisconsin, 85% are reporting to the FBI. They cover 5.7 of our 6 million people. So you got Milwaukee in there, mm-hmm. Madison, Racine, Kenosha, Green Bay. All the big communities are in there. So they're pretty decent numbers. The question is the Trump message about crime breaking through and helping to push things his way in this race? He thinks it is, especially immigrant crime, right?
I was like, just going to bring that up.
We don't break that out in these FBI numbers I've seen at least yet, but that's his focus. These numbers can undercut the argument a little bit.
All right. Well, that will do it for this week. Thanks so much for joining us. I'm Emily Fannin.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
We'll see you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association. bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.